coming.
I patter Ross Sasson from
any, being a member of any of this kind of shir forever, to get tired, you can go. I don't know. He's just a very good rabbi, so he came in to see you. Okay, so Parshat Vayeshev, Yosef Atzel. I didn't photocopy anything, okay, but it's not that difficult. Okay, we have with the Avot, each Av, like we have some kind of midah that is related to the Av, the patriarch, right? So we have Chesed v'Avraham, we have Gvur or Pachad with Yitzchak, and Yaakov we have Emet. And we get to Yosef, and Yosef is Yosef Atzadik. Okay, Yosef, we know him as Yosef HaTzadik, and I wanted to try and understand why that would be the case, when obviously my main matara is to give you some kind of message or messages that will help you in this hour of darkness. Kislev, Galus. So the first question is the negative, right? When we have a story here, which doesn't really present Yosef in the most positive. Is that Tasia?
Yeah.
Okay, got the wrong glass on. Hi, Tasia. So Ele Todot Yosef Yaakov Yosef Ben Shvayesre Shana Hayaro Et Echad Batzon Vehu Nar. So we have a description of Yosef that is unclear. He's 17 years old, but he's a nar. And what is a nar? So Rashi says, I suppose I would call it immaturity, okay. Metaken besa'aro, kind of playing with his hair. I stopped doing that a while ago. Memashmesh be'enav, like doing his eyes. Never did that. Kadesh Yeh Nireh Yafeh, so it would look good. You know that look in the mirror, that glance. V'huna Ebnei Bilha says, Ramban, Sheya Oseh Maaseh Na'arut, Memashmesh Binah Matakeh Besaro. Ramban says the same. And Sefono, V'hunar, Umipnei Na'arutoh Chata, Lavi Dibat Echav, Ki Lo Nisav Lo Itbonen La'acharit Davar. He said, here you have a more expansive definition of nar, in that he not socially eloquent and not socially understanding, in that he didn't understand the ramifications of the stuff he told his father about his brothers. He didn't think ahead. He wasn't thinking it like innocent, but another side of immaturity. Two sides of immaturity, right? Very different on his appearance. And also, he didn't understand the consequences. Afal pishe as maskil mod, even though he was very clever, v'sha achar kach mored zikne ador kamru v'zekanav yichakem v'zekum amram v'lo b'dark dekei etza. So that's the first thing. We have this nar, which is, it's not an indictment of Yosef, but it's certainly not positive. That he's an immature kid, and not really socially with it. I will claim in there's a book I saw once, The Three Pillars. I will claim same jokes forever, eternal jokes. If anyone's not from the Rover, they come and they sit here. What are they laughing at? I want like your first day in the Midrashah when you think that. I told you would one day laugh. You're right, it was just a future. But here I think these are elements of Yosef that will eventually decide why Yehuda's going to be king of Israel and not Yosef. Because Yosef's communication problems are to the end. Internal communication problems. So here we have communication problems. So many sisters coming in, wow. I'm going to sing that song from that Bing Crosby song. Sisters. So we're not putting this one online, right? Now we move into a much more serious stage now, okay? The first stage is kind of the immaturity of Edibatam Ra'a El Avihem. He's also really serious stuff, okay? So Edibatam Ra'a Rashi, Kol Ra'a Shaya Ro'e Be'chav B'nei Le'ah Haya Magid La'aviv. Whatever they did wrong, he told. Stinker, right? Whatever they did wrong, he told. Shayu ochlim eva min achai, and he told things that weren't absolutely true, that he had perceived wrongly. They were eating eva min achai, or mezalzilim b'vnei ashfachot. They were calling the b'nei shfachot avadim, which we have no v'chashudim al arayot. And now all of this is a problematic Rashi. Why? Because Rashi is using Chazal, but there's an implication. It can't be true, right? Because he gets midah k'neged midah. So was he lying? Did he not see things? Did he misunderstand things? Because uveshloshtan laka, he got punished for all three. Aleve min achai v'ishchatu seir izim b'mechirato, right? That they killed a seir izim when they sold him. V'lo achlucha, they didn't eat it alive, right? V'al dibash esipel em shekorim la'achem avadim, that they were calling b'nei bilha v'zilpa avadim, so he was sold as an eved. And arayot, so he gets Potiphar's wife. So the implication in the Chazal here is that he was lying, you know, because otherwise, why would he? You don't get midah k'neged midah. It's not true. I mean, if they're doing these isurim and the avot kept the Torah, so he's got to be mocher. So Kanarit says, what did he do? So this is already something which is much more substantial, right? He's telling tales which are seemingly not true. Now, this isn't just doing your hair, right, and not communicating well. This is something more serious. And the Radak says, he would go and say, you know, his brothers hate him. Which is interesting because Rashi doesn't hold like that, but the Radak says he would talk about the Bnei Shfachot as well, the Dan Naftali Gad and Asher. And he was kind of show off, my father loves you more. And then we have the dreams. That he's going to be melech over the brothers. Now, if we just stop for a moment, this isn't the part that Yosef had started, but if we stop for a moment and we see the stories of Bereshit together, not just Yosef Echav is a story that begins there. And it's an issue that I wrote about called Perspectives, which isn't really what this shiz about, but just to see where Yosef was and what happens with Yosef. If I'm one of the Shvatim, okay, I'm one of the brothers, and I look back at the history of the development of the Jewish people, or Avram's to us. So in Avram's family, there was Yitzchak and Yishmael, and Yishmael got thrown out. Now, he didn't have to get thrown out. If you go back to that medrash at the beginning of the Akedah that Rashi quotes at the beginning of Kaf Beit, where Vahi Achad Rima'ele, you see there a description of a friction at the house of Avram between Yishmael and Yitzchak, where it's totally understandable to understand Yishmael, in that Yishmael went with Avram the full way, had Brit Milah when he was 13, and suddenly this kid is born and he jumps over him. And he jumps over him for what reason? Because he was Sarah's son? But that's not a reason to be the chosen one, because Dan Naphtali and Gad V'Asher are Bilhah and Zilpah's sons, and they're part of Shivtei Yisrael. But it can't erase Yitzchak. Kibi Yitzchak Yikar Chazar. Yitzchak is going to be... Now, Yishmael doesn't have to be rejected. It's the way that Yishmael, I think, reacts to being put in second place. And his reaction is that he's Mezalzel, and he's Mezachek. And eventually it comes to a situation where Sarah demands that Yishmael be thrown out. Sarah demands that he be thrown out, which is foreign to Avram to throw anyone out. We spoke about it this year, Dafka and Shikali, about Lot, because Dafka Avram pushes Lot out, and that's not Avram's characteristic to push Lot out, to push anyone out. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes and says, you've got to listen to Sarah. It seems this was a real issue. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu to intervene in a row, he never intervened in a row between me and my wife. I mean, she's always right anyway, and she tells me I have to listen. I don't need a butt call to tell me you have to listen. She just says it. I say, okay. So Yishmael, now there's also, interestingly with Yishmael, we have a comment by Rashi when Avram dies, that Yitzchak and Yishmael went to bury Avram. And here, Rashi says, here's a sign that Yishmael did tshuva, because he came after Yitzchak. He just has to be Mekabel, the Yitzchak's going to be the first and he's going to be the second. But at least the phenomenon we have, if we just ignore that end bit, not to confuse the story too much, there is Yitzhak and Yishmael's kicked out. There is then Yaakov and Esav. And here it's even more severe, because Esav is a son of Rivka. He's not even, if you want to say there's a Havamina, because he is the son of a midwife, but he's not. He's a son of Rivka, like they're equals. And he gets kicked out too. So now you have next generation. What's Yosef doing? Remember, we had a few weeks ago with two weeks ago with Esav kitzayed befiv. So what Rashi says, yeah, right? He used to trick his father, right? In front of his father, he used to ask good halachic questions, and behind his back, he would do what he did. Yosef is so similar to that. In front of his father, he's a good boy. Behind, he's doing ma'aseh na'arut. He's telling on his brothers. So you're Yehuda, you're Reuven. There's a little Esav here. You got a little Esav here. And then, hamaloch timloch aleinu, what, you're going to rule over us? Who is this kid? Why is he different from Yishmael? Why is he different from Esav? From their perspective. So they throw him out. Totally natural. That's what Sarah did. That's what Rivka did. They threw him out. And you can see that there's no egoistic battle taking place, because once they throw him out, they don't fight between each other. Yeah, it's very Yered Yehuda, but there's no fight within the brothers who's going to lead and who's going to take over. They throw Yosef out, finished. You know, this guy doesn't belong. I wanted to say once that this whole story would have been avoided if Rachel hadn't died. I mean, the pshat for me with Yosef in Ben Zakunim is, why does his father love him so much? He hasn't got a mother. He hasn't got a mother. Well, everyone else has got a mother. So presumably, if he hasn't got a mother, so there was more relationship between Yaakov and Yosef. He loved Rachel, but this kid hasn't got a mother. And Binyamin is smaller, so Binyamin has the extra attention anyway. But Yosef, those teenage years are tough years, and he hasn't got a mother. If Rachel had been there, maybe he wouldn't have been so immature. Maybe he wouldn't have needed so much recognition. I don't know, I'm not going to become too psychological here, but certainly from that fact, when the brothers throw Yosef out, it's a matter that you can understand. Yeah, and there's a precedent, there's two precedents to it, that this boy isn't turning the line, and he's out of here. And to be honest, it's no less severe than throwing Ishmael into the Midbar. It's no less, Ishmael, had it not been for an angel, would have died. And Sarah didn't have any two minds about throwing him out. It's his problem, right? Whatever will be, So that's where Yosef is with regards to, that's the Yosef we meet at the beginning of the parsha. We know that there was no evil intent in Yosef, but from the brother's perspective, I can't see really how he's any different from Esav in their eyes, right? Especially if you take the dibatam ra'ah, the slander of doing real isurim in the eyes of his parents, right? Doing real isurim that he's telling about the brothers, which are serious isurim, then he's trouble. Yosef's trouble. So that's the flip side. Now, what I want to do here now is talk about why he's a tzaddik then. Why is Yosef a tzaddik? This is the beginning of the story, right? So the reason that Yosef is a tzaddik, I came up with about six reasons why we call him Yosef the tzaddik. Most of them are to do with the end of the story, okay? But certainly in the situation when he's 70 years old, there's no sign here that he's a tzaddik. There's an element of immaturity, according to Rashi, an element of even slander. But I want to look at a number of tchunot that we see in Yosef, some at the beginning, some in the middle, and some at the end. The first comment is really hineni. When his father, now Yosef is maybe socially inept to a degree at the beginning, but he's not unaware that his brothers hate him. He's not so detached from reality that he knows his brothers feel strongly against who he is and what he is, and the brothers are Shivtei Israel. And then his father, Vayomer Yisrael El Yosef, this is the first suggestion, Halo achecha ro'im b'shchem, lecha ve'eshlachecha aleihem, vayom elo hineini. I want to send you to them, and he says, ready, I'm ready to go, hineini. Vayom elo lech na re'et shlom achecha ve'et shlom atzon, v'ashivein dva v'shlecheu me'emek chevron v'yavo shchema. So Rashi says on hineini, and here we have the flip side of Yosef, and this is when he's still young, Lashon anava v'zrizut nizdareiz lemitzvat aviv v'yafapi shahaya yodea be'echav shesonim oto. He knew, but his father told him to do something, and he was just prepared to do it. So from that perspective, there's a certain righteousness already at the beginning of Yosef, which is an incredible thing, despite his relationship with his brothers, despite the agav. it's a question for me to understand. You know, when I was, I always say when I was growing up, but we're still in the process of that. But when I was physically growing up, I always imagined Yosef to be so much younger than his brothers. But that's a problem, right? Bichlal, it's a problem. If you start thinking about the psukim over the last few weeks, we know that, for example, that Yaakov worked for 7 years before he married anyone, right? And they married two women within a week, okay? 7 years later, he asked to leave Laban's house and work for 6 years with the stripes and the spots. All of the tribes were born in those 7 years. I don't know what Leah means when she sees that she stopped giving birth. I mean, she had six in 7 years. I don't know exactly what when she means that she's suddenly not giving birth. Maybe there was 1 year when she saw between Dan and Naphtali and whatever. Because Sach HaKol, in 7 years, all 11 of the boys were born. So maximum, and you've got to give 9 months for pregnancy. So there's maximum 6 years between... There's 6 years between Yosef and Reuven. It's not like this little kid running around. It's not like Reuven's in his 40s and Yosef's 17. It's not pshat there, right? Because as soon as Yosef was born, after 14 years, then he says, I want to leave. And he goes through this process of the Nekudim of Rudim. Kachanir Ali. So I haven't yet understood, like, well, you know, that's Sach HaKol 7 years. So you're not talking about such an age gap between. So he's aware, Yosef, and he says Hineni, and there is an element of pure righteousness in that statement of Hineni, of someone being prepared to just do, despite the logic that confronts them. They know that there's a situation here which isn't perfect, but they're still prepared to do it. There's no there's no maybe you'll send someone else, there's no question, there's no you don't understand the situation, Dad. There's Hineni, which shows a certain tmimut to Yosef on the positive side. I think the next is quite incredible. We have this, so he goes looking for his brothers. V'yimseu ish v'hinei to'eh basadeh. He's kind of lost. And he finds a man, Vishalehu Ha'ish Lemo Matvakesh. And the man says, what do you want? What are you looking for? Vayomer Etachai Anochim Vakesh. I'm looking for my brothers. Hagidan Mali Efo Hemroim. It's one of those psukim which is now a Polish pasuk. Warsaw Cemetery. Yeah, so you know, there's certain songs that. Yeah, Gam Ki Elech, every time I get there, I got to. Places and songs, but in recent years we've sung it at the cemetery in Warsaw. But he wants to look for his brothers. Now Ha'ish here is identified by Chazal as being Gavriel. That is a discussion here on Hashkacha, right? The whether he was being directed to a certain place or not directed. But the Ish isn't telling him a geographical reality. He's saying Nasumi there, they're not your brothers, they've left. But he wants his brothers, they're his brothers. Etachai Anochim Vakesh. He might not know how to relate to them. Here you already see from the Hineni, from Etachai Anochim Vakesh, that there's nothing negative about who Yosef is. If anything, there's a bit of tmimut to Yosef. But Etachai Anochim Vakesh, Nasumi there, they're not your brothers. He says, I'm going for my brothers, I want my brothers, I'm looking for my brothers. Even though the man says, they're not your brothers, forget it, move on. And you don't want to get mixed up. And he says, Etachai Anochim Avakesh. That's number two, that's an indication. And the Al-Sheikh says, Ibalzeh, Hishiv Yama Etachai Anochim Avakesh Loma, Gam Shehem Lo Yivakshu Achva Anochim Avakesh. Even if they don't want me as a brother, I want them. So I want them as a brother. It doesn't matter what they want. It doesn't matter what they think. I want them as a brother. So that's the second. The next is just, it's something I can't read to you, okay? But if you have a look at it in the Gemara in Sota, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Bet, I can't read to you for sneer reasons. The description in Chazal of what happens with Potiphar's wife is extremely illustrative. Of a very, very close call. A very, very close call. It's descriptive in a way you can't imagine. But he was in a situation here, even Rashi alludes to it, right, where he stayed there to do his malacha. And Rashi implies that his intention, he stayed there on purpose, you know, he was working there to do his malacha with her, malacha in quotation marks. And the description given by Chazal here is, you know, it's not something that we can learn together, but it describes a kovesh at Yisro of a beautiful woman thrusting herself upon Yosef, and Yosef being in a position, a total position of on his own, and not reacting. And also, again, no one's there. Again, I've often spoken to you in the past about that, the difference between being a frum person in public and being a frum person when you're on your own. In the words of the Kotzker Rebbe, quoting Parashat Nitzavim, "Hanistarot LaShem Elokeinu v'haniglot lanu." The things you do in private, they're the ones for God. The things you do in public, you never really know why you're doing them. They, you know, and here Yosef's alone. There's no one there, and he has to make a decision. Again, colorfully, Chazal say he saw the image of his father, but that's what's in front of him. This much beautiful woman, really thrusting herself upon him, and he was there with the intention to do something, and he overcomes. It's incredible. Again, there's a sitkut here on a private level, which is unbelievable. Many people have fallen in such situations. Many religious people have fallen in such situations. That's number three. Number four is, again, taking the picture of Yosef, again, with an attempt at maybe sticking in a bit of mind reading and reading the situation, perhaps with in a modern way, even though I don't know whether you can. Yosef has, besides the support that his father has given him, Yosef has been in a situation for most of his life where people have rejected him. And even when he went into Galut, he was essentially rejected and thrown into jail, framed by Potiphar's wife and thrown into jail. And when he starts to reach greatness, there's every reason for Yosef to take the credit. Kochi v'otzem yadi, I did it. You know, I've been through the hard times, now I'm doing the good times, and it's me. Yet time and again, Yosef sees God. I'll just quote you a few psukim. That's with Potiphar's wife. Now with the dreams when he's in jail. But he knows he can interpret dreams, but he says God interprets dreams. Then, when he speaks to Paro, when Paro's giving him credit, pulled him out of jail, dressed him nicely, gave him a shave, Vayan Yosef et Paro lemo biladai Elokim yanet shalom. It's God. Now, again, just remember, this is a man, we'll come into it a bit later, but not too later. I know it's always worrying when a rabbi says a bit later, so well, how long is it going on for, right? Later was later, like tomorrow. So he says to Paro, I haven't got any answers, God gives the answers. And again, Chalom Paro Echadu Et Asher HaElokim Osei Gid, God again. And then even afterwards, Hu Adavar Shedibati El Paro Asher HaElokim. And then all the time with Paro is just repeating God. So again, you have this righteousness of Yosef that he has time and again an opportunity to take credit and to push himself forward, and he denies the credit every time. And he sees God. He takes no credit for himself at all in a situation where it wouldn't do him any harm. At the end of the day, to a man who doesn't really believe in God, so it doesn't really matter who says it, God says it, who says it, it doesn't matter who he says. It's not like Paro's now going to go to the Beis Medrash. But he refuses to deny God's involvement. And then, ויחרקר יוסף את אביו ואת אחיו וכל בית אביו לחם לפי עטף ולחם אין בכל הארץ כי כבד הרב מאוד ותלה ארץ מצרים וארץ קנה מפני הרב. So there's absolute hunger. He feeds his family. וילקד יוסף את כל הכסף. Yosef collects all the כסף, all the money הנמצא בארץ מצרים ובארץ קנן בשבר אשר הם שוברים ויהווה יוסף את הכסף בית הפרו. He brings the money to Pharaoh's house. Says the Ramban, what do we care how he collected the money? I mean, we're not interested, to be honest, how Yosef collected the money in Mitzrayim. And then the Ramban says like this, Siper hakatuv ze, v'gamar ha'inyan b'chol ha'parasha lohodia ma'alot Yosef b'chokhma b'tvuna avadat. Tells us his wisdom, his ability to, you know, move money around. V'chi haya ish emunim shehevi kol ha'kesef be'i paro. He didn't launder a penny. He passed all the money to Pharaoh. He didn't keep a dollar, not a cent. Any money that came his way, he just passed to Pharaoh. So here you have righteousness in a totally different area. Everything so far we spoke about was really Bein Adam LeMakom. And then you have this Bein Adam LeChavero with Yosef on a financial level that he's not prepared to keep a penny. He's working for Pharaoh. And any money that's coming is for Beit Paro. He just passes it. That's another tziduk. The next, okay, you're with. I will go over them all in a second. And the next is tziduk hadin. When he meets up with his brothers, which, if you remember, the Beit Halevi isn't necessarily a wonderful meeting between Yosef and his brothers. Vayomi Yosef elechav gashuna elai v'igoshu. Vayomi ani Yosef achechem Hashem achartem oti Mitzrayimah. You sold me. You sold me to Egypt. V'ata al te'atzvu v'al yicha be'enechem ki mechartem oti heina ki l'michia shalachani elokim lifnechem. Because God sent me to feed you. That's why I came. This is the first time he's met his brothers. In a long time. Like 22 years. And the first thing he's got to tell them is that this, God planned this. Not a smack in the face, not a kick in the shin. God did this. This is a plan from God. Kizesh natayim arav bekerev aretz v'od chamesh shenim asha'en charish v'katziv v'shlachani elokim lifneichem lasum lechem sherit ba'aretz u'lachiyot lechem lefleitat gedol. So what I called it was tziduk hadin, Yosef's ability. I mean, this is a man who spent 22 years away from his family, and he sees this all as the hand of God. There's no shtibul in Yerushalayim, in Mitzrayim. There's no yeshiva in Mitzrayim. He left when he was 70 years old. And all he can say is this is a plan of Elohim. And the Babanel says here, Ki machartim oti, hinei heina, kloma, kivan she machartim oti, heina, ein ra'ui she titatzvu. There's no reason why you should be sad. Don't think this was a coincidence. Because God sent me, this was meant to be, because there's a famine, and I was sent here to feed you. So there's no coincidence here, it was all meant to be. וכאילו הודיעם שבהכרח היה מפני הרעב. He's trying to explain to them that everything was, they came down to Egypt only because of the famine. And God sent Yosef there to give them, to sort out the food. So here you have something, Siduk Adin. It's, you know, it's real, right? That Yosef, instead of, he's got a platform here to go for the brothers. You know, what were you doing? What were you thinking? And instead, Yosef just says, this is Min HaShamayim. It's 22 years. This isn't like, I spilled the coffee, it's Min HaShamayim. It's 22 years on your own in Mitzrayim. And his first comment to his brothers is Hakola Tova. Bresla. Two more things I wanted to bring you here. When Yaakov, the brothers come back and they tell Yaakov Yosef's alive. They tell him the whole story. So Yaakov says, Od Yosef ben Ichai. Od Avinu Chai. Od Yosef ben Ichai. Now, there are some Afarshim that say that Yaakov Pasha didn't believe them anymore, right? They just admitted they'd been lying for so many years. So Yaakov doesn't believe them, right? Tell me the truth. Is he alive? Is he not alive? You know, tell me the truth. You know, everything you've told me now for the last two decades is lies. So why should I believe you now? That seems to be pshat. But the Yerucham says something else. Achen kavanat divrei Yaakov heim, ki hagam shenitbaseki odenu chai. So he knows he's still alive. הואיל לדעת שיש לו מסירות, אבל עדיין ליבו דיו דווי עליו לצד היותו בין אומות שפר עבד מושלים עם עודנו בסדקותו. He doesn't say, העוד הוא חי, is Yosef חי. I led a little Yiddish boy of 17 years old down to Egypt. Is that boy still alive? So you're telling me he's physically alive. But is he still alive? It's not in any way similar to Yaakov. Yaakov left home when he was 63. He went to 14 years yeshiva. More than you did, ladies. Even Shalabet, don't get cozy. 14 years. He went to yeshiva at Shein Ve'Eva. He didn't go out into the world. He was 77, Yaakov, a little youngster of 77, having learned by Avram, Yitzchak, and Shem Ve'eva. And he managed 20 in Lavan Garti Ve'chadata. Great, that's good. But this isn't comparable, right? That Yosef went when he was 17, and he spent all of that time on his own. Ha'od Yosef Chai? Yosef, not Sofnat Paneach. Yosef, is Yosef still alive? The ability of Yosef to go down to Mitzrayim. Again, if you want to follow the Rav Yoel Ben Nun, Rav Meidan discussion, which I gave shir on, right, the shir that I used to call phone home, right? Did Yosef phone home, right? Because that discussion there, that perhaps, I'm not sure if it's Rav Yoel or Rav Meidan, one of them, do you remember which one it is? The one who, well, one of them says that Yosef at the beginning believes that Yaakov's involved. Because Yaakov sent him, he got there, the brother threw him in the hole. So why doesn't Yosef phone home? Because he believes that Yaakov's part of the game. Yaakov, he sent him to his brother threw him away. And the first time Yosef has any kind of idea that Yaakov isn't involved is when the brothers come down to Egypt. That's a short period of time, that period of time, right? When the brothers actually come down, they're looking for food in the years of famine. So Yosef is a person who's down in Egypt. It's a possibility that he's been rejected by you, and he still believes. Ishmael was rejected and he didn't believe. He walked away. Esau was rejected. He didn't believe. He walked away. Yosef is down in Egypt on his own. He's still from. It's unbelievable. In Egypt, like in, I suppose it's the equivalent of New York today, right? Egypt then. I'm joking even. It is, right? It's like the center of FS culture, right? It is. Well, bankrupt. No, it's banging, ladies. With all this ISIS stuff, no one stopped to think, how is it that boys and girls from the West who've got money and iPhones are leaving to give up their lives fighting for a cause in the Middle East? Because people want meaning in their life. You know, we're so busy calling them, they are murderers, they are this. But people are leaving these countries and going to fight for causes and give up their lives because there's no ideology whatsoever. The only ideology in this country and in England is money. That's it. They're nice people, but there's no ideology, there's no belief, they've got nothing to live for. How many more phones can they make? How much smaller can they be? How many applications can you make? Like blow your nose application. I don't know, how many applications can you make? There's nothing left to do. People, there's another side to this story, right? Besides fighting the terrorism, is the recognition that there's nothing in Western society left. And a kid looking for meaning, he gets taken in by Muslims. That's what happens. Fundamental Muslims, they take over because they're looking for meaning, and there's no meaning. There's no meaning, there's nothing here. Well, get a career for what? For money. That's fair. So people are nice, they're nice people, but they're going nowhere. So he's in the middle of this, Yosef. And he sticks his belief despite the possibility that he's been rejected by his father and his brothers. Unbelievable. You see, the list of reasons, you see Yosef, I'd say, you see, it's unbelievable. Who Yosef is, the material honesty of Yosef, the ability to stick to his religion, besides the Hineni at the beginning, the search for his brothers, is unbelievable. And then the fact that he doesn't take any kind of revenge on his brothers at all. He heard them talking. He knows what they said about him. So Reuven was a bit less, and Yehuda saved his life. But he heard them talking. He's in every position now to do nakam. He doesn't do it at all. So all of these things together are describing for us a person which is unbelievable. Really unbelievable. It's very interesting, I think. Before I go into why, I think, thank you, it's vodka. I was at the Rebbe this evening. I was with the Rebbe, and they were having l'chaims, and I thought, better not. I was there to see the Rebbe. I didn't change my shoes, I have to admit, I didn't change my shoes there. But, it's interesting to know, isn't it, how by each of the Avot, and Yosef isn't one of the recognized Avot, right? He's one of Shivta Israel, even though he has his own standing in the Sefer of Bereshit. But it's Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. We don't have a bracha for Yosef. But it's interesting, of all the Avot, of Avram who came away from when he came and built Judaism, of Yitzhak, who never left Israel, who's an Olat Mimah. I don't know whether you listen to Shul Klali, but actually eventually found the sources for Yitzhak being killed at the Akedah, right, and being brought back to life. I gave Shiran a few weeks ago. That's Yitzhak, and then Yaakov is Emet. But the only one that's a tzaddik is Yosef. And Yosef learnt the least, spent the least time in yeshiva, spent most of his life in the non-Jewish world, in the middle of idolatry, and Yosef is a tzaddik. There's a message there, you know, there's something that for us, I think, is important. But what I want to do now is take these messages and try and make them relevant to us. And then there's one more thing I want to add towards the end. See, there's hope. I said towards the end. It's no vodka, shoe man. So the first thing, right, is, so I want to look at Yemaaseh Avot Simcha Levanim. I want to have a look at the, I was going to dedicate this shir in your father's name. No, so I want to, but there's also the name.
Aaron.
Was?
Aaron.
Ben.
Pinchas.
Pinchas and?
Bracha Malka.
Bat Harav.
Sado.
Rav Sado. So, it's retrospectively as well. Okay, so what I want to take is the issues that we said were shach by Yosef and see how we apply them to ourselves. So we started with Hineni, which I think is a kind of Bein Adam LeMakom Klali statement of Hineni. Now, whatever it is, here I am. For us, Klapi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, prepared to do without asking. It's Hineni is, I suppose, it totally defines Naaseh V'Nishma, Hineni. Hineni is a kind of Naaseh V'Nishma, right? It's Hineni, you know, whatever. Just saying, I'll do this. It's Naaseh V'Nishma in Nunun, in the middle, Hineni. Naaseh V'Nishma. La'asot afilu kashe ha'tzivu mitnaged l'higayon. When it's illogical, in the case of Yosef, it's illogical. What do you mean, go down to the boys? They're going to beat me up. Best case scenario. You send me out there, they're going to beat me up. It's just, no, Hineni. You know, there's a mission, it has to be done. Hineni, I think, in the reality of college, there's a need for Hineni. There's a need, first and foremost. I mean, what the rabbi and his wife have done here is incredible. It wasn't this way a number of years back. But there's a priority. The priority is your religion. It will live longer than any degree, than any career. It's by far the most important thing. It will outlive everything when you're much older and you see the degree for what it is as a stepping stone for something else, and then the second degree for a stepping stone for something else. You've got to get a career, you've got to do things in life. But Adam Mul HaKadosh Baruch Hu is forever. And it has to be priority. It has to be priority. We spoke about it a bit on Shabbat, but it has to be priority. Priority doesn't always mean quantity of time, right? It just means priority. This morning I was in the Young Israel of Woodmere. There were two shiurim going on at the woohoo. There were two shiurim going on at the same time at 6:30, and they were packed. Everyone went to work after that, right? I presume, but that's a priority. It's a priority, right? That's a priority. That's it. That's what my priority is. So when they say do a chabura here, I'm not, no raised eyebrows. You do a chabura here, ladies. You've got to do a chabura here. There's got to be five of you who take this on. They do a chabura here every week. You've got time. Honestly, you've got time. You've got time. You know, the married women, maybe a bit less time. But sakha kol, you've got time. You know, you got time for everything else. You got time for a half an hour, 45 minute chabur on a Thursday night. It's priority. It's you have to do it, and you have to do it. And you have to fix it up. You don't need rabbis to visit you for it. You just need to take turns. You need five of you. The rest will join in. Five people are committed. They put their name down. They coordinate it with Shoshana or with a rabbi. And you work out. You can do a chabur here. Whatever the hours are, right? You have to keep the rabbi out all hours. But you should be doing the chabur. You can all learn, ladies. I've seen you learn. So you do the chabur. Priority. You won't, I promise you, you won't fail exams because of an hour of Torah a week together. You won't fail one exam. You might for playing Candy Crump or Temple Plump, you might fail exams for that. But I tell my kids, downloaded that game, what a ridiculous game. I deleted it straight away. They have these little, they've got these little coins on the side and they're being chased by gorillas. And I said to them, you know what, I explained them, I gave them shot here. I said, the coins you leave for Tzedaka. Because you get to the water, you don't mikvah. And the gorillas is Olam Hazeh, chasing you. So you go into the mikvah, finish, leave the money, into the water. So no, but you've got to cut, no, leave the money. So then I deleted it, what a load of rubbish. I'm sitting on a plane, I see this 40-year-old, he was at least 40. He's playing this Candy Crump, 4 hours. I said, like, what are you doing? Where is your brain? Like, where is it? Where is thy brain? Where is it? Like, what are you doing? So people have got time for this and suddenly they've got no time. Right? They've got time to surf this, surf that, 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 Google this, Google that, and they've got no time to. You've got time, ladies. No excuses. Remember what he said about Midrash? This is a job for Yetzer Tov, right? You're in charge. Eldasa. Give them hell. She's in charge. Afterwards, you sign up with Clara. She's doing this, right? You pick a time. Don't say, I can't. Okay, that's number one. Hineini, priority, right? You got priority. The next. Etachai anochi mevakesh. Yeah, this is an incredible thing. Etachai anochi mevakesh. It's like despite. Many years ago, and I've told you this before, but I'm happy if you remember it. Many, many years ago in an election campaign in Israel, there was the father of Yair Lapid, Tommy Lapid, Zichor Livracha, created a party which essentially was totally based on hating Frumkai. It was totally based on that. I think in the first election, it was, correct me if I'm wrong, it was 16 or 17 mandates he got. That's close to 300,000 people. Just on an anti-Dati vote. Rav Aviner wrote an article, the Shabbat, immediately after that. And he said, from people have to ask themselves the question, why 300,000 people in Israel gave their vote on this one subject? What are we doing wrong? We're doing something terribly wrong. Because so many people are put off by religion. And so people say, so it's tit for tat. They don't know. It's not. It's etachai anochi mevakesh. Our role is to go out looking for them. It doesn't matter what they do. And if they play dirty politics, we can't play dirty politics because we're looking for a brother. From people shouldn't be basing their they shouldn't be playing political games. From people should be doing what Torah says. Etachai anochi mevakesh. That's something that, you know, in college, after your hineni, and the order here is important, right? Because the imena nili mili, you have to look after yourselves first. You can't go out and help people if it's going to blow your candle out. But after the hineni is etachai anochi mevakesh. You must have hundreds, if not thousands, of Jews on campus here. Thousands? Is it thousands?
Thousands.
So where are they? Why are they in my shit? Where are they? Right? You can go get them. Look for them. You have to convert them. Look for them. Where are they? You know, where are these people? And so the people say, Nasumi's there. They've gone. No, they're not gone. Etachan. Yosef says, I'm looking for them. I don't care what they think. Etachan, Ochim Evakesh. I'm looking for my brothers. With creativity, with whatever. Not lies, but creativity and real thought of how to get people involved. You're here. You're here already, so do a bit of Yosef. You're determined and absolutely upright, despite whatever their initial reaction is, whatever people think. Etachai anochi mevakesh. I keep going and I keep looking. Number two. Number three is that tava, that yetzer, which is so hard. A student once asked in one of the shirim, they made this point, which is a valid point, and I thought of an answer, and which is like, if Mashiach didn't come in the generations of Gedolim, why is he going to come now? Right? Like, what if? Of course, he's come. Right? People just haven't gotten the plane yet. But but they say, why hasn't he come? Right? How's he going to come with us now? And one of the suggestions I said in reply was, you know, I don't think, and I have said this to you in a different context in the past when we talk about the year in Israel, the challenges to be a religious person today, I think, are greater than they ever were before. The kind of things that we are facing, I don't think people ever faced before. I just don't think they are. In recent years, in my shirim, when I've been speaking about boys and girls, are things that never existed in the past. People got married 10 years earlier, 100 years ago. So they weren't waiting until they were mid-20s to marry. They weren't dealing with their hormones for 10 years as single people. Now, people got married. They got married much earlier. And there was a time when the secular world, when the non-Jewish world had standards. They had some kind of standards, right? There aren't any standards anymore. I always joke, the chevra, they go to Frisch, they go to the co-ed schools, they think they're people of the world, then they come to college and they realise they were in kindergarten, right? They got no idea. Until you get to college, you realise, oh my word. Like, all the co-ed schools are really Beis Yaakov, right? You come here, what the hell's going on? Like, nothing, and Din and Dayan, anything goes, everything goes, and people stay from. It's an incredible challenge to remain religious, and to not be worn down. In the environment that we're in, you know, so much is going on around us. That's also the Sidkut of Yosef, but Yosef didn't run to a ghetto. Yosef didn't go inside, but Yosef did it. He managed it. For those of you who weren't with us on Shabbat, so I reminded the girls of Netivot Shalom, where he says the whole point of Hanukkah is not to light up the darkness; it's to prove that you can bring light to darkness. Shabbos is lighting up the darkness. Chanukah is being in the dark and bringing light into the dark. It's the darkest time of the month. It's the darkest time of the year. It's in the darkest place. It's below Asarat Tfachim and above Shalosh. The message of Chanukah is that you can light up the darkness. It's a Chag of Galut. It's not Shabbos. Shabbos is Main Olam Haba. Shabbos is clarity. Shabbos, everything is light. But it's and that you can do, but you need strength. That Sidkat Yosef is to be there. And then you have the Kochi Va'otzem Yadi, right? Is the understanding that is to see God and not taking too much credit for ourselves. Is that Yosef Ha'elokim Ha'elokim Ha'elokim? We have a problem today. I've got this new shir in school called Eternity. Based on a book that I'm trying to write on the messages of Nevi'im Rishonim, and we just started the book of Shoftim. It's clear from all of Tanakh, but the book of Shoftim at the beginning is crystal clear that things happen because of people's sin, and that's the only reason they happen. Right? Every time the pasuk says they sin, so God brought something upon them. So, but it's the sin that is the cause. The problem that we were discussing in the shir is there were times when Nevi'im told us what the sin was. There were times when we had an idea, an iota of what we were doing wrong. And now we really don't, right? I'm not one of these people, as you know, who says it's because of this or because of that. God forbid. We don't know. We got no idea. It's a problem. But we do know that God's involved. That's fundamental to our belief. And that's also Sidkat Yosef, is never to forget Elohim. In the middle of Mitzrayim, he's Maskiret Elohim, Elohim, Elohim. And then we have money. I've got to tell you something Rav Meidan said in Shul the other week, and I never thought about it before. It's not surprising. Rav Meidan is the kind of guy who just watching Shul. You watch him. You just watch him, and suddenly he goes, in the middle of davening, and you realize there's another Sicha. Just coming through, being born in front of your eyes. He's just in a totally different world. And he said something which, again, I think is obvious now. But he's talking about, you know, what I mentioned before, that it's not in Avram's character to throw people out. It's not Avram doesn't throw people out. So why does he throw Lot out? What happened? Now, something that we know but we don't know is that Lot went down to Egypt with Avram. I mentioned it in Strive for Truth once, you know, that Rashi says Lot's zechut is that he didn't tell on Sarah. Not that he did hachnasa orchim, because that's not his, that was habit. But that he didn't tell on Sarah. Lot was in Mitzrayim. When they left Mitzrayim, they were made rich by Pharaoh. Lot and Avram were made rich. The money destroyed Lot. That's when Lot went wrong. The money destroyed Lot. He was okay before then. He didn't tell on Avram. And even Rashi says that beforehand God spoke to him before then. But he got the money when he was in Egypt, and the money ruined him. The money took over. So Avram got the money as well. But Avram saw we can't stay together. The money went to his head. He went down to Sodom. He wanted... But that's I never thought about it like that before. But that's like the crucial parting point between Avram and Lot, that he gets the money, then he starts arguing, this is my land, and I'm the... Greed! The money, it takes over, it becomes such a priority, such a central part of our lives. And yet you see Yosef, all of this money passing through his hands. And one has to assume that the expectation of Pharaoh was that he'd take some. Everyone else does. Why wouldn't he? There are no receipts in Mitzrayim, I presume, in those days. So I'd take a couple of whatever they were. They weren't rubles, I promise you, they weren't rubles. But take a couple of rubles, I don't know. No one's going to say anything. Pharaoh's dead rich, he owns everything. And he doesn't take a penny. The honesty. The ability, you know, we're often faced with this question when it comes up in the Jewish community. From people get caught in scandals, money scandals. And for years I thought, yeah, it's a reflection that they're not really religious, but I don't think it's so true. I think the truth is that the most constant and recurring test of emuna in our lives is money, is making parnasa. It's constant, it's always there. It's always there. There are other tests that we have in our emuna, God forbid, but the recurring issue in our lives is how to pay bills. It's how to pay rent, it's how to get food, it's how to maybe buy a piece of clothing that I want to buy. That's recurring. It's the biggest, yes, it's the most consistent, it's the biggest worry. Ultimately, that's why everyone's here, right? You need a career, you need to earn money. You could have an ideal, you could have a career that you really want to do, and that's good too, but a lot of our choices are based on how are we going to make a living, and is this a good enough living, or I'm not going to do this because I can't make the money, and so on and so forth. And Yosef, it gives us this kind of headline, you know, not a penny. Bitachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is on a constant level, is unbelievable. So it's something else as well. You know, we need to earn a living again, but how much and where and what? His belief in Hashkacha, which again is, you know, this is one of the comments. There's a comment of Reb Chaim. The Gemara in Sotah talks about signs of Geula. And there are a lot of negative signs. It looks good for us at the moment, according to the signs in Sota. It really looks very good. A lot of the negative things mentioned in Sota, we're far beyond them already. And one of them is a strange statement, Pnei hador ka pnei hakelev. The face of the generation is like the face of a dog. I don't know what that means. What does that mean? Please don't get upset if you have dogs. Don't put your hand on. I'm going to do that. What do you mean? What does it mean? The face of a... So Reb Chaim has a very interesting interpretation of the face of a generation like the face of a dog. So Reb Chaim says, if you, and he doesn't suggest that you do this, but he says, if you hit a dog with a stick, what does a dog jump at?
The stick.
He says, people don't realize where to look. They keep looking at the stick. They don't understand. There's someone mechavein the stick. You know, you have to maybe push the stick aside, but there's someone mechavein the stick. And if you notice today, I don't know whether it's so true in America. It's certainly true in Israel. Whenever anything happens, we need a scapegoat within 10 minutes. Someone has to go to jail. You can't, God forbid, say he's just a human being. Even ladies, Khalila, go back to the summer. There's this Nebuch police lady. She gets 2,500 hoax calls a day. And she's the poor lady who answers the phone when Gilad Shur phones her. And she doesn't take it seriously. And her life is over. Because we need to blame someone. We've got to blame someone. The Arabs are phoning this woman day and night and saying, and she's the one woman. And every reporter who's castigating and indicting would have done exactly the same thing. But they're all great people sitting in their little stations judging the world and never really doing anything. And this poor woman, she's a poor woman, like, what's she meant to do? There's hoaxes going on all day, and she got the real one. She got the real one. And they took a tatel chaval al azman. So she has responsibility, but the hypocrisy of it, that every other regular citizen wouldn't have done exactly the same at 12 o'clock at night on a Thursday night when they've had 10, 20, 30 calls like that in a day. We've got to blame someone. We've got to blame someone. So it's all her fault. Or it's their fault for hitchhiking. It's everyone's fault except for the murderers. It's got to be someone's fault. Pnei ha-dog, pnei ha-kelev. You're jumping at the stick. And Yosef sees God. Unbelievable. After 22 years, he sees God. This is all God's plan. It's just unbelievable. It's so real. It's true. But the ability for him to say that, after suffering so much, having been alone for so long, it's just an unbelievable statement. That this is because of God. It's, you know, I see God here. And again, we're in a different position. We're not avot. We're not imahot. And we can see God in general terms, but it's very, very hard to say this is because of this and this is because of this. We can't say it. It's asur to say it. But in general terms, at least, to see God in is again something. So far, just to remember, we've got Hineni, his priority. We've got Etacha Anochim Avakesh, after we're strong, we have to go and look. We have the need to overcome the physical yesa, which is an incredible challenge. We have the need to not take all the credit to ourselves. We have the need to be pure in our religion, in Choshe Mishpat, as we are in Orach Chaim. We have the need to see Hashkacha, and our main aim is Od Yosef Chai. Our main aim is that we come out of this as we went in. That's massive. You know, to be able to, a few years ago, myself, Rabbi Sussman, Rav Shames, I think the Akira, do you remember his name, Rav Sussman, that doctor of education from YU, we went in the summer to speak to him? It was really impressive. I don't know, we sat with him
Scott
at...
Goldberg?
Could be. He runs the education thing there?
Yeah, Scott Goldberg.
Right, Scott, that's right. So he asked us a question that I'd really never thought of to that degree. He asked us, how do you define success? Oh, you haven't got exams. So a school can define success by exams, right? They do exams, X pass. A lot of schools cheat with it, you know, with their statistics or whatever. They don't let people take exams, they're not going to pass, and then the statistics are great. That's what my high school did, and I certainly wasn't allowed to take any exams. We had a student once, an English student, many, many years ago. The queen came to a school, they put her in a cupboard. They thought she'd embarrass them, so they put her in the cupboard. They locked her in the cupboard. They did. Yeah, she would have embarrassed them. I know she would have done. She told me she would have done. But they hide it. Okay, but what do you do if you're in a midrash or yeshiva? What are your results? How do you test your results? How do you know you're successful? So I'm not going to say aliyah. Well, I am aliyah, but above and beyond. Like, how do you know success? Anyway, so many generations where people eventually come. But what is success? So I was speaking to someone. A girl asked me in an interview. So I said, you know what? I think success is. I think your success. I think if girls are coming back like Bursty, like Tamar, like Yippie, everyone else. So I don't forget any names. But people are coming back after 4 years or more. Bursty, how many?
20 years.
Yeah.
We're 10.
Schumann, how many years?
We're 10.
Exactly, look at that. Od Yosef Chai, look at that. She's even better than she was in there. She's just got better. Two man. Imagine if she'd been three man. He'd like be a gadol ador by now. You got one of our best rabbi here, you know that. So you know the but if you what'd you say?
We might have met in the robot.
No. All comes out in the wash. But that's success, right? The success is if at 5, 10 you're down, that you're doing this. So your success. Od Yosef Chai. To be in it. I saw a beautiful statement by the Admiral Misokolov on Shabbos. It says, Im Lavan Garti. I kept Taryag with Lavan. Not despite Lavan. I was in the world of Lavan and I kept Taryag. Im Lavan Garti. I'm fresh out the Rebbe. Right? Im Lavan Garti. That's a great ideal. So these are messages. I wanted to leave you with with one message, which leaves us all with a national challenge. Something I thought about in the summer, and there were some very special moments in the summer, despite the tragedy. But, you know, it's just an idea. I was in South Africa. I left the Gush the same night as the boys left the Gush. I left an hour before. And I arrived in South Africa, got the news, and I saw incredible things, you know. At Yaldena's wedding, was the Tehillim at the Chuppah was an incredible thing. It was just an incredible moment. I was almost crying. It was just an incredible moment. In the middle of a chuppah, proper Tehillim, real Tehillim, you know. And saw a lot of incredible things in the summer. But I think that still, as a nation, we know about the union of Yachid, and we know about the union of Tzibur. But there's a third union that we haven't got used to, which is Am. Am is much more than a Tzibur. Am is a nation. For 2,000 years we weren't together. We had congregations, and that was a Tzibur. Tfilah b'Tzibur. But Am Yisrael is a Darga Me'alze. There's actually something very sad at the end of the Book of Bereshit. Right at the end of the Book of Bereshit. So, the brothers go together to bury Yaakov. And when they come back, the brothers tell Yosef that our father said that you mustn't harm us. Now, this is a while after, right? This is 17 years after the reconciliation. Yosef stayed in the metropolis. The brothers went to Goshen, just in New Jersey. I'm searching for one city in America that has its own name and hasn't copied it from somewhere else. Just one. Maybe Arizona. I don't know, it's a state, whatever. Whatever. Everything. Birmingham, Alabama. Why? If you've ever been to Birmingham, you would never ever call a place after Birmingham. They're competing, actually, I think, the two places for philosophical questions of why they exist. You have at the end of the Book of Bereshit, you see there is no Achdut. The brothers think Yosef wants to kill them. There is no Achdut. It's one of the saddest things at the end of the Book of Bereshit, that they actually believe that Yosef didn't do anything to them because their father was alive. And the minute the father's dead, he's going to finish him off. So there's no Yaakov, Yehuda and Yosef is still split. It's like an open question at the end of the Book of Bereshit. And to this day, Yehuda and Yosef is still split. It's the people is still split. However you want to define Yehuda, however you want to define Yosef, is one of those tasks that we've not managed to overcome. We have glimpses of the beauty of the Achdut, and you've all been in Israel in times of trouble and you've seen it. You've seen those glimpses and how good it feels. I don't know whether you read any stuff I wrote over the summer, but I had a moment when I got off that plane after the wedding, which was the most incredible moment. It was just, you know, this time last year I was in army uniform scathing about various Hafkanot, and I was very angry and very upset. And but I got off the plane. As we landed, everyone turns their phones on, and the moment we landed, they released the news they'd found the bodies. It happened then. It wasn't like a catch-up. It much happened on that moment. I had a terrible evening, you know. My son knew all three boys. I'd never seen him like that in my life, you know. He's tough, you know. And got off the plane, and you know, you come off the plane, and there's all these bathrooms on the way to passport control. So I'm in the bathroom, whatever. Came out of the bathroom, there's a chassid standing opposite me. And he just said to me, "You heard the news?" I don't know who he was. I said, "Yeah, I heard the news." He said, "Allah pani." And we just stared at each other. And it was so mitbakesh that I hug him. It really was. And I didn't. And I regretted that there was such a feeling of togetherness at that moment. And people are cynical, only in times of Bechorza is still something. But that Yehuda Yosef is still there. It's the end of Sefer Bereshit. It's beyond the other things I spoke. It's beyond Etachai Anochim of Akesh. It's beyond congregation and looking for other people in Queen's College. This is Yisrael. It's one nation. And the need to find the tolerance and acceptability to understand that we're one nation. And as I say, in moments when, I don't know whether you remember, there's a Beit HaLevi in the beginning of Shemot, where the Beit HaLevi talks about V'omalach b'damai chayi. On occasion I speak about it by the grave of in Warsaw of Chernyakov, Adam Chernyakov, the head of the, because on his grave it says V'omalach b'damai chayi, V'omalach b'damai chayi. And I have no reason, I don't know why it says it. He wasn't a frum man. It says V'omalach b'damai chayi. And the Beis HaLevi says there are two ways to be identified as a Jew. One is dam hamila, ba'omalach b'damai chayi, when you have pride in your Judaism. It says, but if you don't, the goyim will remind you you're a Jew. Ba'omalach b'damai chayi. And Adam Chernyakov wrote in one of the last statements he wrote before he killed himself, we gave it to you in a file, it's called The Smoking Volcano. Was it? He said the Jews came to Poland, they built this country, they invested everything in this country, and had I known it would have ended this way, I would have gone to Israel years ago. He says, for all my life, people think, that they don't need their Judaism, but the minute that happens, so they'll go and remind you who you are. So mimele, we're one people, I like it or not, and that's what's left open. Yosef, it's a one thing in the whole story here. You can find so many things about Sidkat Yosef. He didn't manage to unite with his brothers. He didn't manage. It could have been their chisaron, right? Because he had no intent of taking the kama. But he didn't manage. And in one of my essays, when I asked the question, who should be king of Israel? Should it be David? Should it be Yehuda? Should it be Yosef? Now, on the facts, Yosef is the best candidate, right? He's a governmental leader. He can run an economy. He's a trained and successful national leader. But Yehuda is still more popular because Yehuda unites the people. Yosef can be the foreign minister, but Yehuda, his brothers wait for him. They're listening to him. And it wins. It's the deciding factor that you can unite the people, that the people will speak to you. You can be together with the people. And that's something that is just a general message. It's not the message for us. Our aim, ladies, is to, on a final note, we had a rabbi in Shul who used to, he didn't know how to finish. So he kept saying, and may you this, and may you that. And my dad turned around to me and he said, when's it going to be June? So, great sense of humour, my dad. And my years in Chutz Larich that I didn't want to have, I think it's always depressing when people say the best years of your life. It's pretty depressing when you have the best years of your life when you're 18, like, that's it. All over. A girl says, I mean, here it is, or the best year of my life. Okay, close up, right, that's it. Why waste time? I mean, but they were great years. They were great years because we brought light to darkness. We brought light to darkness. We did important stuff. And they were good years. It was a type of shlichut, maybe a coerced shlichut. But once we accepted that that's what we were doing, it took me a while to accept. But once we accepted what we were doing, then they were incredible years. And very, very good years. And so the bracha really is, and may, the bracha really, really is that you go to Lavan's house as Yaakov, but you come back as Israel. You come back shalem, because you grow through the struggle and you grow through the confrontation. But you need to be in this room. You need to be. This is environment. You need to be surrounded by Kedusha. You need to be surrounded by... You need Frumka. You don't realize how much. And it is not like we were speaking the other day. It's not a matter of learning in your flat or learning. It's that you need to be in a Beit Midrash. You need to be in Minyan. You need to be in an atmosphere that is conducive to Kedusha. And that gives us the strength. We want to come back Shalem. And in order to do that, we have to have the conviction, and we have to do stuff. We have to have Hineni, has to be priority. And the fact that you're here tonight, I think, very near to finals, whatever they are, but whenever they are. But you know, but you got Chofesh coming up after, so you know you got time to sit and think and. Hatmadah, Tefillah, Shabbat, these are all things that are key to coming out Shalem. And these years can be incredibly important years. Because Rav Hirsch says, final word, that Rav Hirsch says when Avram is negotiating for Sodom, he says, Chamishim Sadikim Betoch Ha'ir. That Sadik lives in the world. Betoch Ha'ir. We can lock ourselves in a Beit Midrash and we'll be pure, but the tzaddik is betochai im lavan garti. It's not to be seen as a b'dieved. It's a reality, and something that if you really see through, you can. So it's wonderful to see you all. Let me just see you all. Wait, I can't see you all now. Let me see you. There you are. Rav Sasson wants you to sing. So we have to do Baal Shem Tov Nigun, right? First ease. We do Baal Shem Tov Nigun. Chana, lead the way. Chana. Baal Shem Tov Nigun.